what's going on here?
Resistance is futile.
This,
indeed you are, Paul,
is...
It's in my head, Paul!
Fan Effect.
Welcome to another episode of Fan Effect, sponsored by the Megaplex Theaters, Utah's premier entertainment experience. And talking about an experience, we are in my favorite fandom today, DC Comics, and we're discussing the long-awaited and long-controversial movie The Flash, which just came out this past weekend. We are recording it on a Monday, so we've seen how the world has kind of interacted with it since then over the last 4 or 5 days. But, you know, this is the 14th movie in the DC Extended Universe. It hit theaters at a very strange point for this superhero canon. It hit the theaters in a very weird place for the superhero canon as of, you know, the end of 2022, the DC Extended Universe, DCEU. It's been scrapped and it's being reworked by James Gunn. The Flash, which is this movie, as well as the upcoming Aquaman, The Lost Kingdom, is really going to serve as kind of a soft reboot for the universe, is what Gunn has said. And maybe this soft reboot, the ending of the DCU, kind of led to its soft opening this weekend. But we'll kind of see how this kind of works out. And we're going to kind of deep dive into this as super fans today. So Andy is out of town right now. He is on vacation. Lucky him. But I am super lucky because I am sitting in the studio today with a fellow. Oh, this is Kellyanne Halverson, by the way. I should probably introduce myself. Producer, semi-host, Kellyanne Halverson today. I am sitting with a fellow DC animated, DC everything fan, Don Brinkerhoff of KSL News Radio. Welcome, Don.
Thanks, Kellyanne. Thanks for inviting me to be here.
Oh, I'm so excited. So Don and I have been talking DC Comics for ages. He walks around covered in Superman memorabilia. I walk around with Wonder Woman and Batman all the time. This is one thing we've bonded over. And I'm surprised this is the first time actually coming together and talking about this on the podcast.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I've been on with Andy a few times, but never with you.
So. Yeah. Well, and as soon as I saw, you know, The Flash, we've been waiting for years and years for this version of it. And as soon as I had the request come in for the screening, I'm like, I have to take Don. I've tried before with a couple things. It's never worked out. So this has been fantastic. So before we really dive into the plot and the movie, I just want to let people know that this is going to be a deep dive, spoiler-filled episode. And so if you want to take a pause now, go see the movie. And then come back and visit us. Or if you want more of a spoiler-free review, we do have Andy's What to Watch, which we turned into a podcast. So go check that out. I'll link that in the show copy. But first, let's go ahead and just listen to a bit of the trailer first to set the mood.
So you're saying you could travel back in time?
But Bruce, I can fix things. I can save people. I can save my mom. I can save your parents.
You can also destroy everything.
Wait, he's Batman?
You want to get nuts? Let's get nuts.
Oh, this rips!
Are you ready?
Ready. Let's go.
All right, so you are going to notice some familiar faces there. Familiar voices, I guess, if you are fans of the DC Universe. Yes, Michael Keaton's back. We have Ben Affleck. We have a bit of a Batman multiverse kind of thing going here, as well as The Flash, which is anybody is familiar with the comics. We know that The Flash does like to mess with the universe quite a bit here. Now, let's kind of do our overall reactions first before we dive into this. Don, what was your overall reactions?
So I really liked the film. Mm-hmm. I was talking to Doug Wright on the movie show last weekend.
That's why we couldn't record this last
right?
week.
It's because I was over at, Megaplex, okay. Actually, with Doug. And I really liked this. This was really well done. Visuals, extremely well done. Super speed. Super speed's one of those things that has always been tough to get right, even in the animated stuff, usually the animated stuff, it's a little easier because you're not working with real people. But super speed has always kind of been that nobody quite gets it right. They get it really right. And I love the fact that they show that the Flash doesn't just have two speeds, right?
Yes.
He's not just slow or normal speed, normal human speed and super speed, Flash speed, right? but that there are multiple kind of, you know, multiple ranges of mm-hmm. how fast he can actually move.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that is, you know, they do a really good job is sometimes everything stops because he's moving so fast. But at other times things are moving slow and mm-hmm. which I really enjoyed that. That was really great.
Which offered some comedic stuff. There's one line in there like, you should have seen that in slow motion.
Yes, exactly.
Which, of course, we experienced it.
So great visuals. Really kind of the only thing that kind of detracted from this for me, mm-hmm. and it really came down to two things.
Okay.
Number one, I really wish the people at DC had someone who could write something new.
Ooh, okay.
Okay, because we have seen Flashpoint, the graphic novel.
Yes.
We have seen Flashpoint, the animated movie.
Yes.
We've seen the second Flashpoint, the animated movie.
Mm-hmm.
The entire...
We saw it in the Flash series.
The entire Flash series. Mm-hmm. Season one, oh, it's Flashpoint. Oh, no, ha, ha, fooled you. Season two, Flashpoint. Oh, no, ha, ha, fooled you, Crisis.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, come on. At least three full seasons of the Flash TV show told this same story.
Mm-hmm. So you wanted something new, not something you'd already seen in the comics.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, introducing the world in general, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Doug made an interesting comment. He said, yeah, I didn't know about all these, so I really liked it.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, well, that's great. And the other thing that kind of detracted from me is there is a scene in here, and I'm going to say it right now.
Yep.
Spoilers ahead.
This is spoilers.
Spoilers ahead.
This is your last chance
to
pause.
When he burns his clothes off.
Yeah.
They do it for comedic effect.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that we've known about the Flash. He's burned his clothes off in the comics for, you know, 60 years or something.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the visuals went a little bit far.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's standing in the Ring of Fire. The musical instruments are bouncing around him.
Little tiny tunes
kind of thing. And, you know, and you're seeing him kind of that far off shot. And then you see the tambourine roll out. And it's like, okay, now cut to an upper body shot.
Mm-hmm.
No, no.
Boom.
Boom.
There's his butt.
I mean, I seriously thought we were going to see things that would have made this definitely an R-rated movie.
Okay.
It came so close with that scene in the tambourine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so he gets back to the apartment and, you know, oh, there's the tambourine and we're still seeing pretty much everything.
Here's a rope. Take the rope.
Here's the rope. Take the rope. And he walks to go change. Oh, no, more butt shot.
Yep.
And then he comes out and he's in the robe and oh no, he's going to vibrate through the floor
and
he comes back up with a pot. And I'm like, okay,
we get
it's one thing to take a comedic look at some, you know, oh, it's funny. He burned his clothes off.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought, come on,
that was
guys,
a little too far for you.
Just don't take it quite so far.
Mm-hmm.
Back this off. It would have been, it was funny. And then it was like, this is just uncomfortable.
And Ezra Miller's not, as a female, he's not eye candy. He's a little too awkward for all that. So I can understand that. So those are your two things. You wanted something new for the movie.
Wanted something
and
new.
And some of the crude and humor stuff got taken a little bit too far.
Yeah, it was just a little bit too far for me. And I will agree, Andy's the one that voiced this originally,
mm-hmm.
and so that's why I don't include it in my two things, because he said it, and I was like, you're absolutely right.
Well, that's why we discuss it. Go deep dives. I want to hear your thoughts and incorporate them.
So the kind of the third thing, and it's, like I said, it's Andy's thing, but I was like, I absolutely 100% agree with this, mm-hmm. is, come on, did we have to give everything away in the trailers?
That is true. I did not watch the final trailers for this before the screening because I wanted more of a clear line.
Tried,
and that's something Andy has changed for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I tried to avoid trailers. I tried, but I get DC stuff in my feeds like nobody would believe.
Same.
And, oh, well, there's the Flash. Oh, really? Okay. Well, Michael Keaton, we all knew that because
Michael
he's
Keaton.
Been on every talk show mm-hmm. talking mm-hmm. about putting the cowl back on.
Mm-hmm.
save the let's get nuts comment. Mm-hmm. That would have been hilarious.
Yep.
If the first time we had seen that was in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
You want to get nuts? Let's get nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And it would, the entire audience would have erupted. There was not a spark of laughter.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Mm-hmm.
We all knew it was coming.
Because we saw it in the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's definitely marketing issues that have happened with this movie. And part of that is those trailer issues, in my opinion.
Now, there are a couple of nice surprises. Mm-hmm. Okay. I actually like seeing George Clooney come back.
Yes. Biggest cameo of the show.
Right. It's like, oh, there he is.
Nick Cage is mine.
Okay. Nick Cage coming in. Now, Andy asked the question and... I don't know because I didn't look it up. I was going to whether that was a CGI Nick Cage or whether he put on the suit.
He put on the suit. I did look that up. He did put on the suit and he interacted with the directors and everything like that. And then it was CGI'd and added to match the comics and everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a really nice moment. That was a really nice moment. One thing I kind of was maybe. Maybe disappointed.
Okay.
During that particular sequence, right?
When I think you're going to say what I'm going to say.
When the Earths are coming in and they're starting to collide and the universes are collapsing on each other. Where were the rest of the flashes?
Right. We saw a little bit of the glance of like the World War II original kind of pith helmet look to it.
Yeah. We saw one little thing of Jay Garrick. Mm-hmm. Where's Wally?
Mm-hmm.
Where's Kid Flash?
Right.
Where's Jesse
West is like
Quick?
My favorite.
Mm-hmm. Where are the rest of the Flash family? Mm-hmm. Where is the rest of the Flash family?
They were rewarding the other fans. They rewarded by Superman by having, we had Christopher Reeves in. We had Nicolas Cage. We had Adam West, but where was the Flashes?
Where were the Flashes? Mm-hmm. Where were the rest of the Flashes?
And think of the super fans of the stuff on CW right now. They would have loved to see their Flash.
Where's some animated stuff?
That was mine. I'm like, Nicolas, sorry, I got so excited I couldn't even think straight there. Kevin Conroy, I need his voice. At least his voice gives me something.
Can you imagine bringing in Mark Hamill?
Oh my gosh, everyone would have flipped out.
Right?
Like, oh, Mark Hamill. Let's get Tim Daly, because you could have a little bit of Superman. Let's get Wally West. Let's get the Justice League United stuff in there. Oh, that would have been amazing.
Think of all of the things that they could have brought into that to really have expanded the fan experience. Yeah, we're watching the visuals. Let's just hear the voices, right?
Right? You look at, some of the Star Wars stuff when, was it the last one when all the voices of the Jedi are going. They had Ahsoka Tano. They had Kanan. They had these ones from the animated ones that so many people fell within there. They could have totally done the same in the Worlds Colliding. But I did love how that looked. I loved how we had the Chronos Bowl is what they called it, where you had this like flip book that was around it going backwards and forwards in time. And then the actual Worlds Colliding made of that. And that was a wonderful reward for the fandom. So they could have done a little bit more.
Yeah.
I think that's my favorite thing about this movie is – DC is really great at rewarding its existing fans. It's not great at pulling in new fans, I must admit.
Unfortunately.
They're trying. But, so we had so many references to the comics within here. Very, very heavy, the Flashpoint comics, which was 2011. That's when they kind of reset everything and they started the new 52.
Right.
This is actually when I came back into comics, so it has a special place for me. I was bullied and teased out of comics as a child because I was a girl. I remember very specifically telling people Batman was my favorite show in like first grade and being teased for it. So I love it. So the reset of Flashpoint is very similar to this storyline, which we'll talk about in a second. But instead of him going back in time and meeting Thomas Wayne, who's become Batman, we have Michael Keaton as a totally different Batman. And we have all these pop culture references we're discovering. It's the same. And I think what I really loved about this film is it was rewarding to existing audiences that loved it, that knew Flashpoint, that know Doom, that know the Justice League animated and every little thing. But it was trying to present these stories in a way to reach new audiences. And so I really liked how they were able to pull that in. And I liked that it was a fresh multiverse. we have seen so many time traveling, multiverse, era traveling. I really wish this didn't come so out so close to Spider-Verse, Across the Spider-Verse, because that was like my favorite movie of the year. I've seen it 3 times now in the theater. But I absolutely loved it. So, you know, it was action-packed. It was humorous. It captures, like, the over-the-top gothic camp of Tim Burton's Batman. We have the down-to-earth high drama of the Snyderverse. And so each fans of Generations will love this. And hopefully it'll get some new fans. If audiences will give it the chance, it doesn't look like they did over the weekend, which just breaks my heart. But like we said, marketing could have been done totally different. But I really love this movie. I think for me, though, I didn't like the CGI of it. The babies. Like, does the director hate babies or something? Baby Kal-El got killed. We have the babies falling from the hospital and being thrown into microwaves. I know that's done for comedic effect and to, like, show the peril and to make you really feel for it. But, ooh, did not like that. But overall, I loved it. I love the callbacks. I love that we got, you know, Gal Gadot in there. We got Ben Affleck. Why can't we have Henry Cavill in?
Right. You know, and they're like the scene where Superman comes kind of sliding out and you see him from behind and just, he's heat visioning
he's
like a mountain.
Elsewhere.
You know, and you see that and that's supposed to be Cavill. That was totally CGI.
Totally CGI.
It's like, come on, just put him in the suit.
Just put him in the suit.
And the thing is, here's what's really weird. This has been in the can.
Mm-hmm.
This has been in the can, done for 3 years.
3 years, 2020.
Done. Done. Now, we all know it was because of Ezra Miller and his woohoo.
Yeah.
Kind of going off.
Which made it awkward to watch, I must admit. It took me a while to let go of Ezra Miller, the person, and go to the character.
Just go to the character. Can I tell you? The scene where he goes and steals beer from the neighbor.
Yeah.
I was like, I may have cut that.
Would he do that? Yeah.
So he vibrates through the wall, mm-hmm. right, and comes back mm-hmm. with beer. Iris is there in the apartment or whatever. And it's what gives him the idea to go back and save his mom. And wait, if I put a can of tomatoes in the cart, mm-hmm. it'll save her. And then I don't have to interact and blah, blah. Mm-hmm. That's where he gets the idea, right, is that interaction with Iris. But it's like, Ezra Miller going next door and stealing beer?
No, let's not do that. He's had so many run-ins with the law.
And then he's had that exact run-in with the law.
That's one reason why it was so awkward to see him half, mostly naked in the street. It was like, oh, he has done some weird stuff. I don't want to see the character
right?
like that. It's not funny anymore.
Yeah.
It's too real.
And so, you know, I think And yes, there would have had to have been a reshoot because I'm sure that was shot.
3 years to reshoot. You know? That's fine.
But go in and do the reshoot, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he opens the fridge and there's a beer. Mm-hmm. You lose one laugh.
Mm-hmm. He could have run to the store and got some. Like that would have been hilarious too.
Yeah. Boom.
He still could have
bound to the store.
Vibrated through the wall.
He comes back through the door or vibrates back through the wall mm-hmm. or whatever. He's got a bag in his hand mm-hmm. that has fictional grocery store. Mm-hmm. Look, send him down to Bibbo's Pub.
Okay, across the street, you know what was the pub across the street?
Of
course,
clubs.
I noticed this. It was called Grayson's. Have him run to Grayson's and get it. Then we have a double thing there.
Right.
Well, and like, roll back real quick to talk about Henry Cavill. He had filmed some scenes. He'd filmed some scenes and they removed it from it. Why do they hate Henry Cavill so much? I freaking love him. He's like uber nerd and so hot I can't look him in the eye even on the screen. Like, let's bring him back in there. Ugh. See, and I know this is kind of nitpicky and everything, but you need to be aware of, in the marketing and the creation of the film, you need to be aware of what's happening with the actors and everything. So, I agree. Let's not have him break in the law. Let's not have him overly naked. You know, it took a while for me to let go of that awkwardness as I was watching the film. And, you know, it was really the music that made it for me. Like, as soon as I really started hearing kind of those undertones of the Justice League theme and the Batman theme from the 1980s, 1990s, I was able to finally let go of who Ezra Miller was and watch the film.
Watch the movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, we get back to Cavill or Cavill or however you say it. I don't know. I haven't asked him. Here, they cut him from the movie.
Yeah.
We have two previous incidents.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Black Adam.
Yep. Yep.
And
that's the biggest cheer in the movie.
And then Shazam.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And guess what? Just simply go cut those post credit scenes. They knew they were going to ditch the DCEU.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They knew it was gone.
Mm-hmm.
They knew that Henry Cavill was not going to be Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Why let that go and have Cavill tweet out, "Yep, I'm back in the
money,
suit."
Money. They wanted to see if they can stir up enough interest. If this can make enough money, if Black Adam could make enough money, even though we said no to Henry Cavill, we'll bring him back. But all they did was tease the Uber fans and break my heart again.
It you know, after the announcement. So I went into Black Adam. I went with Andy to the preview.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's a good thing I did because Doug and Steve Sales both were like, "Can you please explain what just happened?"
Okay, good.
Because the problem with Black Adam is you take two characters which have just really deep, complicated backgrounds.
Very complicated.
In Hawkman and Dr. Fate.
Which I loved Dr. Fate in that.
Oh, my mm-hmm. goodness.
I want Pierce Brosnan to have a whole one.
Pierce Brosnan did such an amazing job.
Right?
But you have to know who Dr. Fate is.
Right? And his
you can't just
tragic,
go,
heart-wrenching
hey,
story.
Here's this guy who
he's
the Doc Strange of DC. No, he's not.
No.
He's possessed by the helmet,
mm-hmm.
which is a deity,
mm-hmm.
which is making him nuts for over 100 years.
Right? And it's tragic because he doesn't have his family anymore. He doesn't have
anything that grounds him,
mm-hmm.
anything that holds him to reality. Anyway, so I'm having to explain all of this to Doug and Steve.
Oh, I'm going to enjoy this episode.
After the movie, right? Well, yeah, so here comes the scene.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's nobody on Earth that can stop me. And from the setup line, you know who's dropping out.
Boom. Yeah.
You know, and here comes the music. And here he is. You're making a lot of people nervous. I was very, 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 and I am the Uber Superman fan.
Yes, 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 yes.
Christopher Reeve, I was 8 years old.
Yes.
That's enough said, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I loved his appearance in Flash.
Yeah.
I teared up. I loved that he was standing next to Helen Slater.
Oh, my gosh.
I wish they hadn't. The CG was good, but I wish it hadn't necessarily CG'd.
It kind of had this blurred look to it that I didn't agree with.
Yeah.
If you wanted to go realistic, go realistic.
I mean, they could have found a piece of film of Christopher Reeve standing there and then film Helen Slater. Okay, she doesn't look like she did when she filmed
de-age
Supergirl.
They're doing it all the time.
Yeah, de-age her a little bit. Standard. Come on. Anyway, back to, so I was very, very skeptical about Henry Cavill.
Okay.
Just was. I'm like, if a Brit can play Superman,
mm-hmm.
an American can play 007.
Yeah.
I said that to multiple people, and people would look at me like just in shock, and I'm like, no, it's the truth.
Yep, yep. It's called acting.
And then I saw him, and I was like, this guy looks like Superman. How many Supermans have there been when he looks less muscular in the suit than when he's
yes,
out of the
yes.
suit? I was like,
that's
everybody else
formable.
Gets padding. His suit actually makes him look smaller,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
right?
And he does it with this kind of genuine kindness that I love from him. I don't know how a man that looks like him and performs like him could be so humble and look, you know, how he and interacting with it. Like, wow. I love him as Superman. And I don't know what it is that studios are dropping him from things.
Yeah.
Like, he's no longer doing The Witcher either. And
right.
I'm like, what is going on here?
So he, you know, here he comes. He drops in. He walks in. And yeah, in Black Adam, in the preview,
mm-hmm.
and in every single time that I saw the
biggest
film
chair. Mm-hmm.
in theaters, the audience would erupt when he walks in.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, his tweet that comes out the next day, yep, I'm Superman again. I'm back. And so.
And yet they had Ben Affleck. They had Gal Gadot. We, you know, like, They could have brought back the three. They could have brought back the trio, the triad, the trinity. Just bring him in, even just for a second. Don't just have him away. You know, they're able to bring Wonder Woman in. They're able to bring Ben Affleck. Ben Affleck really played a critical role. We had a wonderful comedic moment with the lasso between, you know.
That was
like my favorite moment.
Oh,
you know?
My goodness. That was one of my favorite
moments. Because my ego is too big to get this off of me. Then, of course, Ezra's being, I think of Ezra because he is this version. I love it. They could have brought him in. They could have brought Henry Cavill in. They could have done a little bit more rewarding in that end. But I just had to chalk it up. There's just something that they just don't want Henry Cavill anymore, and it just breaks my heart.
Yeah.
Like not even reference. Yeah. I don't even know. All right. So let's move beyond that. Though it's really, really hard for me.
One more piece about the colliding worlds.
Go for it.
Where was Wonder Woman?
Right?
Where was the world
Batman,
with Wonder Woman?
Superman.
We see now. I loved the Batman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the pictures of all the different Batman.
Particularly Adam West running. Like for some reason, that just made my heart soar.
Right. We see a bunch of different Supermen.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Where was Wonder Woman?
Bring in Linda Carter.
Bring in Gal Gadot.
Right?
Right?
Where, it would have been just fine.
Where are the images of Wonder Woman?
Yes, I agree. We could have had a couple more there. And I think particularly if we see the success of Spider-Verse, people loved the first one so much. What did we want in Spider-Verse 2? Infinite freaking number. There was Peter Parker was like the big one for the first one. We had like car versions of Peter Parker. We had web-slinging cats. Like, we would have been okay with more than just, like, three or four worlds colliding together.
Right.
Although I did love that Nicolas Cage. If you guys don't know, Nicolas Cage is a super Superman fan. He named one of his kids Kal-El. Like,
yes.
That's fantastic.
Legitimately.
He was semi-cast as a Tim Burton. I think it was Tim Burton. Superman in the 80s. There is pictures of him. There's kind of what the script would have been like, which we kind of saw a little glimpse of into that world. He's voiced him before on like the Teen Titans Go to the Movie. He was the Superman there. So when I had seen rumors that he was going to be in it, I was trying to avoid him because I love it so much. That was like my big cheering moment of the movie was that. I loved kind of the switches that we saw where instead of going to the Russian place where they were holding on to Superman in the comics, it wasn't Superman when we got there. It was Superwoman. We had a Kara Zor-El in there. Kara, is it Zor-El or is it a different L? Because it's Zor. That's right. And I love these little twists in there. I loved the fresh take on the multiverse in this movie, where we've seen the timeline kind of horizontal look and things breaking up many times. We saw that from Back to the Future. We saw that in Loki. We've seen that in all these Marvel shows as well. And even some of the stuff we see in Spider-Verse, they're explaining it like a web. They're explaining it like a tree. We had a totally different and fun and fresh look at the multiverse in this one. Where he breaks the multiverse, he doesn't just break it forward. He breaks it past. And they explain it with spaghetti.
That was one of the best explanations I have ever seen. I love that Michael Keaton takes two strands of spaghetti and he lays one and he goes, you've probably seen a movie where
they explain it like this.
And it's a direct slam on Marvel because that's exactly how the Ancient One explains it to Hulk/Bruce Banner, right? It's the Hulk Banner or whatever. I don't know what they call
Professor Hulk.
Professor Hulk or whatever.
When he's smart and together.
That's literally, she fractures the timeline and sends one off this way. You've probably seen a movie where it looks
that's
this.
That's not how it works.
That's not how it works. And then he explains the whole you move it forward, you move it back.
And even just as silly as like he literally breaks the spaghetti on each other and you see it goes different directions. I freaking love that. And then when he makes the spaghetti.
And then when he just goes, he just drops the bowl in there.
It's a
and
mess.
And you're looking at it and he's like, and then he drops the, then he drops the sauce. It's a hot mess. That's what it was. It's a hot mess. What a great line.
Well, and even like, and you're going to see some of the spaghetti kind of clings together. We're going to be mostly parallel to each other. There's other places that are kind of crazy and chaotic. I love the idea that when you change a moment in time, because time is infinite and ongoing and it's all present at once, you're going to change the back too. And how fun is in this movie how you start seeing that was through pop culture. Michael J. Fox wasn't in Back to the Future.
Oh, that was so brilliantly done. Well, and they don't stop there.
No, they keep going.
Because they, so-and-so. No, he's, no, that's so. And they,
he's
they
not
go
in
through this.
You mean Kevin Bacon, the guy from Top Gun? And of course it's Kevin Bacon.
Kevin Bacon.
6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Yes. What a brilliantly well done
and
kind of,
fun.
You know, it's like, oh, all of these pieces that are now broken.
Mm-hmm.
And then one, and I, this is one of the reasons I liked seeing George Clooney come back at the
yes.
end.
Yes.
That's that piece of spaghetti that's yep. running almost
uh-oh.
Identical.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one
there's
tiny
one
little change.
And it sets up the soft reboot that's going to happen with James Gunn, which
right.
me and you both talked about. We're kind of heartbroken about that. Let's take a pin here and let's take a soft break. And then we're going to come back and keep diving into this. So we'll be back in just a second. So we're back. It's Kellyanne Halverson hosting today with our good friend Don Brinkerhoff from KSL News Radio, uber Superman fan, DC Comics fan, and I'm having so much fun just nerding out with you today. Let's continue a little bit on some of these deep dives into the storyline here. You know, you've already seen the show. We don't need to go over all the plot points or anything like that. We just need to know that they came from Flashpoint, it came from Doom, it came from these different DC universes, and it's introducing him to new audiences as well as rewarding audiences like us. What was some of your other favorite kind of calls into the comics, into previous shows of
DC? So I loved that the Batmobile was Michael Keaton's Batmobile.
I'm clapping. Yes. So.
It was Michael Keaton's Batmobile. It wasn't Val Kilmer's Batmobile. It wasn't George Clooney's Batmobile.
No.
It wasn't Ben Affleck's
Batmobile.
It wasn't Christopher Nolan's. It wasn't anyone else's. It was Michael Keaton's Batmobile.
Curves on it, the beautiful sleekness of it.
That looked like, I mean, that had a really great look, especially for the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Well, technically, I guess 90s, but.
90s, 80s, throwback to the noir, gothic look. That beautifulness we were talking about.
I loved when the younger Barry, and what a great, Ezra Miller, I give him props.
Yes.
I never thought I would give Ezra Miller props, but I give him props for playing two very different characters in this movie.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And playing both of them very, very well.
Very well, and it was still consistent of what he would have been like if he had that mother.
Yeah.
Like, it was still very much like he's like, oh, I understand what people talk about me talking too much. But he was more confident because he had grown up with a mother.
With
he was
mom.
Able to have friendships because he had that nurturing. He had that experience. So it was.
He'd had parents.
It was still the same Barry, but he was more well-rounded and taken care of. So he wasn't as awkward. Loved it. And I loved the whole. Seeing your 18-year-old awkward self.
Yes.
That he's like 28 in this older one. So a little bit more mature, a little bit more experience, and kind of that play on the characters there. That was brilliant. I did love that.
But I love when the younger Barry comes up with the bag and he goes, look, it laughs.
Oh, yes.
And it's the Joker's laugh bag. From Jack Nicholson, you know, and it's the laugh bag from after Nicholson falls off the cathedral and he's laying there and the Gotham PD are going to come are kind of coming in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't know what to think of this guy because let's face it, he had done some really bad stuff.
Creepy
mm-hmm. stuff. And they're coming in. They're cautious. And you just hear this.
I can't even do it.
I can't either.
It's so creepy and repetitive. And
you just hear this laughing. And here he comes with the bag.
Mm-hmm.
What a brilliant touchback to that very first Batman movie.
Mm-hmm.
When we, you know, we're kind of introduced to, you know, where does he get those toys? What a, you know, and it takes you back to Jack Nicholson, who... I love Jack Nicholson as the Joker.
Yes.
Because he's just nuts enough.
Yes.
But he's brilliant nuts.
Mm-hmm.
People have asked me, you know, what'd you think of Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor? And I said, Jesse Eisenberg didn't play Lex Luthor. Jesse Eisenberg played the Joker.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And think about it. If that had been the Joker and
money.
Not Lex Luthor.
Mm-hmm. It would have been the same. Wow.
How good would he have been as the Joker?
Mm-hmm.
Just this chaotic, just nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant, but nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Lex
wow.
Luthor's calculating and scheming.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, he's nuts. He's
vindictive.
He's
a
vindictive
little different.
And he's mm-hmm. homicidal. And,
mm-hmm.
But he's not crazy nuts.
Mm-mm, mm-mm.
That was the problem.
Joker's nuts. Joker's
nuts.
Fish. He poisons fish so that they all smile. Like, that's totally a Joker move. It's
right.
It's totally crazy.
And so,
having
once
the
again,
Joker pulled in. Mm-hmm.
Having that iconic Jack Nicholson Joker
mm-hmm.
brought into the movie through just that simple little bag.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. You mentioned as we were walking to our cars after the movie.
Yeah, we couldn't stop talking. We kept talking.
You said, I wish I had seen a giant penny.
Yes.
Yes. Where was the giant penny?
I want the giant penny. I want the T-Rex in the background. Although I was really glad that they did a callback to the set from the 80s and 90s. I love the waterfall. I love the technology there. Even like the fact that it was like a little rollerball mouse instead of the full one. You look at the mug. It was that old Wayne Enterprises icon on it. That was really fun and everything. And I'm really glad to have that.
Yeah.
But like one thing I love about the comics a little bit more is they do add a little bit more of like there's the giant penny. There's the Joker card. There is the ventriloquist dummy. There's those little things to call back. And yet again, it goes back. We want even more rewards as Uber
yeah.
fans. Is just pile it on.
Yeah.
But what I loved, though, is like you have that beautiful scene there. You have the beautiful waterfall coming down and all the equipment and everything. And we see the bat plane when it drops down and it unfolds like an actual bat and the real bats are flying all around it and it's covered in moss and things like that. And you have that Tim Burton, that you have that theme coming down, the Danny Elfman theme, and you're just like, oh my gosh, I'm home. I'm yep. home in this other world of mine. And just all these like silly little references in there where even when we have the older Flash regaining his powers, what do they send up into the sky? A bat kite.
A bat kite. That was brilliant. And that throws back all the way back into the Adam West.
Right?
Because that's the kind of thing that we would have seen in
oh,
the 100%. Adam West comics, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Was something kind of goofy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we know that the Adam West Batman was heavily, heavily influenced. Influenced is not the right word. They were trying to play
the
comic code critics.
Yep, yep, yep.
They couldn't be. They had to be so campy
mm-hmm.
to get it to pass
mm-hmm.
the comic code.
To show that we're not endangering your children.
No.
These are good.
Look
stories.
At the, and you mentioned, you know, oh, look, everything is labeled
yeah,
so we can read
you to
it.
Read. Yep, yep, yep. Which is, I love going back. Once you learn the comic code authority and the drama at the time, going back and watching like the Adam West movies and stuff, I'm like,
yeah.
oh, I love it so much.
Because it explains
mm-hmm.
why did we get the big pow,
mm-hmm.
crash, boom. Oh, see?
Oh,
we're teaching them to read.
Even in like the DC animated universe world, which is where I was introduced to it, you have, you know, after like Batman pushes someone off the building, there's always a grunt or something. The person, you hear that the person survives. These little cues and stuff that it's okay for children to see this, which I'm grateful because I was able to get into it. And you kind of see this in this movie as well. It is PG-13 for acts of some violence, a little bit of nudity, and some crude humor and things like that. But I think overall it's something that you could bring your tween to. It's not something you'd be too worried from. And I think they're very aware of that in this movie is how are we going to bring more people into this universe? How are we going to bring them in and join them? And I think one way they really did that pretty well is even though I'm really sad it's not Henry Cavill as Superman, we had Supergirl. Well, Superwoman, actually, I guess. What did they call her in this one?
They never give her a name. They never gave her a name. She introduces herself as Kara Zor-El.
Yeah. We had Zod back. We had all of that going on.
I love that they brought back the original actor to play Zod.
Yes.
I was like, thank you.
I know people are very divided on Man of Steel, so.
Well, it's because it's a divisive, very divisive
yes.
film. What would have been kind of fun, though, because we see when we're introduced to Kara, she's emaciated. She's been...
Yes. And now the bumps on her spine, you can almost see piercings as they've been experimenting on her.
it's like, and most people probably won't get the reference. In fact, I could go through those that were with us that night at the premiere, and I'll bet there were not a third of them that understood why the lights in that globe were red.
The red sun.
Mm-hmm. Of course, that keeps Kryptonians powerless. Everybody thinks, oh, kryptonite. Yeah, there's a lot of ways to take
when you
out
have
a Kryptonian.
A superhero so powerful, it's hard to give him a challenge. You had to have ways to turn him down.
So here she is. She's emaciated. She's in this globe, and they find her. I would have loved if the first thing she says was in Kryptonian.
Oh, that would have been amazing.
Like in Batman. Batman and Superman, when they introduced
Public Enemies.
Public Enemies,
yeah.
Batman and Superman, Public Enemies. When they introduced Kara, and you know, she's kind of tearing up the Batcave.
Yeah.
And Superman comes in and starts talking to her in Kryptonian.
You owe me that. I don't know how I'm gonna do that on a journalist's salary.
Yeah, he's like, just send me the bill, and he goes, right, on a journalist's salary. Right. But so here she is, she's disoriented. And this is in the Public Enemies. Mm-hmm. She's disoriented and everything. And Superman comes in and he's talking Kryptonian.
Mm-hmm.
He takes his cape off and wraps her up,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he says, this is my cousin, Kara,
mm-hmm.
you know. I would have loved in the Flash movie, I would have loved if the first thing she said was in Kryptonian and then have everybody just kind of look like,
I don't know that.
What did you say? Mm-hmm. And then have her switch to English. Mm-hmm. I would have loved if the first thing she said was Kryptonian.
And then switch to English. Or even like switch to Russian and then to English.
To show that she's
also very smart. She has. Yeah, I think that'd be wonderful. I love that. But I do love how she remained weak until they took her up. You have the moment of basking in the sun, and then she just kicks butt.
it's very much
references to panels in the comics and in the movie as well. Like, we see that in the comics, but it's with Kal-El. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was also wondering, we're going to have a little red sun in here. Like,
Well, and Andy actually leaned over to me, and he's like, Are we going to get Red Sun Superman on this?
Because when we pull up to like the prison at first, there was total that kind of dark vibes in it. The little logo and the red and everything. I'm like, ooh, we might get a little. But that's one thing DC has learned from Man of Steel and Justice League is if you put too many of the comics in one thing, you're broken it up into several movies inside of it. It gets too long. It gets too draining. So I'm really glad they didn't, although that would have been cool. But that's going to be okay with me. One thing that kid did kind of bug me about that. Oh, wait. First, one thing I love. I love how as she's back at, you know, Wayne Manor and whatnot, she's in the sun and she's kind of dealing with all the noise and stuff like we saw young.
In Man of Steel.
Man of Steel.
When Zod first shows up and Superman takes his helmet off and exposes him to everything.
It's just too much for them, and they had to adjust. And, you know, she didn't have to overcome the lungs because she'd already had done that by that time. But the too much coming in at once. She's like, why should I help people? People are terrible. And I loved Barry Allen there. Ezra, she's like, yeah, some people are dicks. But also there's some real. I'm like, yeah, that's totally true. what kind of bugged me, so she leaves. She goes see Zod talking to the people at the military base because they can't turn over.
They don't have it.
They don't have him. They don't have her because she's over in Russia. And then she instantly goes back and she's like, okay, yeah, I'll help you guys. There was no moment of change for her there of like, yeah, some people can be nice. Like, I don't know about that.
They kind of tried to do it. I think they maybe should have done a little bit more. But she asks Barry. Mm-hmm. She's like, "Why did you save me?"
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's that. I mean, they kind of approach it, but
there should have been another interaction somewhere in between.
Something in between.
Yeah.
Seeing Zod just open fire.
Mm-hmm.
Coming back to the cave.
Mm-hmm. Like an interaction with a child, an interaction with a person. I think of, you know, this ice cream is fantastic from Wonder Woman. You know, like there should have been something there.
You should be very proud.
But I was really glad she came back. And I was glad she came back when she came back because we have the whole let's give Barry Allen his powers back and the chemical and the lightning and things like that and how hard it is and striving to do that. And then what does she do? She scoops him up into his arms. It's very much that crisis hold from the comics that she takes him up and is able to get the lightning there. So you got that little reference within there. But I wish there would have been a little something more there. I love younger Flash taking the Batman suit and turning it into his own with spray paint and duct tape and stuff. Laughed so hard. I cannot wait for Comic-Con for Fanix in the fall and seeing people do that. And then even the little point where he realizes he can't turn his neck. And so he like breaks the neck of the Batman suit in order to do that. Like, I loved that. I loved it. And so now we have these four different heroes. We have 10 years older Flash. We have the younger Flash, who's a totally different person because he was raised by parents and he felt that love and acceptance and everything. We have Michael Keaton, like one of my favorite Batmans ever. A little like meh, a little old and worn, but happy to be there and to be fighting and to using his toys.
And I love when he's like, "Oh, this is going to hurt."
This is going to hurt.
Because he knows he's older. He's not quite as agile as he used to be. He's not as flexible as he used to be. Oh, this is going to hurt.
But he still does it.
But he's still Batman.
Freaking Batman, yes. And then we have Kara instead of Cal, which is just wonderful. And they're going to face off with Zod. And, you know, I loved Man of Steel. I'm sorry. Like, yes, it had its faults, but I was so happy to see it on the screen in that form. So I'm very happy. You had, like, his lady, his, like, general that's with him. What's her face?
I can't.
The big giant.
Fiona.
I always want to say Farrah.
Anyway, we know who we're talking about.
You have all these references to the old ones. You don't have references to Sears, which I'm grateful for because that was one of the reasons I didn't like Man of Steel was all the product placement. And one thing I love about it is we have this big, massive fight. And guess what? They pulled it out of the city. And it's out in the desert with military people who are hired and ready to fight and be able, not a whole bunch of people ready to be knocked down in their office building.
Yes. They took the fight out of Metropolis. which is a great I think something that they learned from Man of Steel.
Yes. Like I was uncomfortable with that. Like they're just ruining the whole city.
Now one I read obviously years and years ago an interview that was done with the writers of Man of Steel.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't realize there was supposed to be a Man of Steel 2, which was going to be titled Man of Tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Tell me.
And the whole idea behind the plot in Man of Tomorrow was going to be Superman helps rebuild Metropolis into the city of tomorrow, which is why they destroyed it in Man of Steel.
That
so they
made
could
so much
rebuild
more sense.
It, and he becomes the iconic hero that everybody loves because he comes back in and literally helps rebuild this entire city. And all of the modern pieces that we don't see in Metropolis.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because he wasn't there to put them in Metropolis.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole idea behind Man of Tomorrow, which was supposed to be the sequel, but of course Man of Steel didn't do as well
as
they wanted it.
Because they put too much product placement in it.
And
a couple of things.
So it doesn't bring in as much money, and so DC and Warner Brothers do what they do every time, and they panic. They wanted Marvel money from the first movie. Marvel didn't get Marvel money from the first Iron Man.
And they learned from their failures and they made fun of it further down the line instead of rebooting it.
Right. So what did they do? Then we get Batman v Superman, which was hey, Batman always makes money. Let's put Batman on the seat let's put Batman up on the screen again
because he always makes a big name. Let's pull him in.
Mm-hmm. He only played Daredevil because he didn't think he would ever get Batman. He's actually said that. And you take these two iconic stories.
Wonderful.
And you mash them together, and you do it in a hurry.
But they did it in a hurry. It was two movies in one.
And they did it in a hurry.
Death of Batman, Doomsday.
And so, lo and behold, we get the impatient Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
Instead of being patient and going, all right, well, let's build on what we've started and do Man of Tomorrow. And then if you want to do Batman v Superman, or maybe you do Wonder Woman next.
Which was amazing.
Then do.
They took their time on Wonder Woman.
If they would just quit panicking every time they don't make $1 billion and go, okay, where do we go from here? But no, this is not DC Comics. Okay, so we were talking about comic references. Let us slide back in time.
Yes.
Okay, we had the Golden Age.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Everyone loves it. That's how it starts. They launch superheroes.
Then we have the Silver Age. Silver Age was great. Some of the stories are a little goofy, but Silver Age is great. And then we're losing readers. So what do we do? Yeah. We're going to reboot the universe.
Yep.
Right?
That was the 80s. That was the Crisis on Multiple Earths.
Yeah. Yep. So then we have Crisis. That's the first full DC reboot. We're literally going to take all of these different stories and we're going to come back down to one continuity.
We're going to bring it all back together.
All back together. And then a little while later, comics aren't selling, so we're going to break Batman's back and we're going to kill Superman.
Yeah. Death of Superman. Everyone had the armbands. Yep.
Okay. Oh, yeah. We brought readers in for a little while. Readership is down. What are we going to do? We're going to go 0 hour. And we're going to...
Not a fan of 0 hour.
I liked the story. I thought it was a great story. My number two is Green Lantern for a short time. And we're deep enough into the podcast.
I love Blackest Night. There's some story arcs in Green Lantern.
See, I don't like Blackest Night, but... we're deep enough into the podcast now that nobody's going to hear this. That's going to out me. When I came to Salt Lake as a reporter, I was Clark Green.
Oh wow! Okay,
Clark Kent,
love
Green Lantern.
I was
Clark Green for the first several years that I was a reporter in Salt Lake. I was doing crime and criminal courts, and my news director said you need to have a pseudonym. So that you don't have to try and go through the whole, unlisted number and all those kinds of things.
Yeah.
And so I was Clark Green. So I hated seeing Hal Jordan turned into the ultimate bad guy. And even when they bring him back, Batman has a great line in the comic when Hal has kind of come out on the other side and he's no longer Parallax. And, Parallax was some sort of a demonic possession and blah, 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 blah,
blah, blah, blah, blah. Yep.
And Batman goes, he still killed trillions of people. What a wonderful line. It's
right?
Like, you can't just come back from that. You can't just go, oh, hi, welcome back, Hal.
Anyway,
0 hour. So I liked the concept of 0 hour. That, what are we going to do? We're literally going to restart
everything.
We're going back to the Big Bang. And Hal Jordan Parallax is going to restart time so that he can control it. It's a great concept, but once again,
they lost.
Go back. We're going to restart the universe, and you get a few readers for a little while, but then all of the other stories.
Well, and then they start speeding up their restarts. It's not just every 10 years or so. It's like every 4 years.
So New 52.
New 52.
I didn't get into New 52. Why? It only lasted 1 year. New 52 was a one-year story arc.
But it brought me back. I got a Kindle that Christmas that New 52 had just started in like the October. And of course, you have like the free stuff for a little bit.
Right.
I'd kind of started experimenting again with Batman because just YouTube's things popping up that I liked. I dove in head first, and I loved it. And I went back and I read Flashpoint, and that's when I went back and did like Year One Batman. I started rewatching the animated series, which I'd secretly watched like all growing up. And we should go in this our next segment, like how do you get into DC and why? But what was my point there? I'm just so excited to talk about this. New 52 brought me in, and.
New 52 brought you back in.
Brought me back in. That's true.
The problem with New 52 is
they didn't stick with it.
Well, not only did they not stick with it, but they took some of their iconic characters and really tried to reshape them. Superman, for example.
Mm-hmm.
He's not Clark Kent.
He's not friendly.
He's Superman. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of this ornery, angry person.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not...
They're trying to make him interesting by making him more human, I guess.
You know,
but that's why you like Clark Kent, is he's what you inspire to.
Right. Clark Kent is... So it's been said that Bruce Wayne is the secret identity of Batman.
Which I also have problems with, but that's okay.
Okay. Bruce Wayne is the secret identity of Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Because Batman is who he is.
Yeah.
Clark Kent is who he is.
Yes.
Superman is what he can do.
Yes, 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 yes.
And New 52, that was not the case.
Yep.
You had Superman, and he's exploring all these things. He's having this romance with Wonder Woman, mm-hmm. which
I hated. I'm a Bat-Wendy fan, 100%.
Yeah, it's like, come on. You know, yes, we understand why those two.
In the long run, my kingdom come, you know.
In the long run. There's really not two individuals on the DC Earth that
aren't as well. They're well matched, and they'll live forever. They'll be beautiful and have beautiful kids.
Exactly.
But for this phase in his life,
come on, it's
immortality.
It's Lois.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Lois keeps him grounded.
Yes.
Which is one of the things that they didn't do well in the Snyderverse.
No, not at all. Like I love Amy Adams. She was not Lois.
She was not a good Lois Lane.
No.
Enchanted, I thought, was brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
I could watch Enchanted 100 times, mm-hmm. and when she cuts her hair, I'm like, oh. Because she is so good as Giselle, the princess, right?
Yes.
She was not a good Lois Lane. When I found out who it was, I was like, it's really funny. I was questioning Henry Cavill. And I'm like,
but it was
Amy
opposite.
And it was opposite.
Same with Ben Affleck. I'm like, oh, Ben Affleck can't be Batman. No, he is Batman.
Yeah, he did a good job.
What is it? The 90s with Dean Cain, Lois and Clark.
Lois and Clark.
What was her name? I loved her. Terry Hatcher. I loved her as Lois Lane. Like her in the comics and the animated ones, that's like my Lois Lane. Like,
and she did a very...
And she's like spunky and go-getty. Like you talk about going into journalism and you took on... You know, Kent Green or whatever.
Clark Green.
Like, there's so many times where, like, I don't want to do this. I shouldn't be speaking. I'm like, no, I'm going to be freaking Lois Lane. I'm going to get in there, even if I don't feel like there's a place for me and I'm going to do it. I've talked to Becky Bruce about this, too. Lois Lane got her into it as well.
Yeah.
There's something wonderful about these characters that just go forever.
And Terry Hatcher did an amazing job as Lois. She was the comic book Lois because, she was that. I'm going to get the story.
I don't care. Like,
regardless. Now, I actually really liked Lois and Clark up until halfway through the third season. And then I said, come on,
So
season one, it's the introduction.
Yes, which is great. I love that he has both his parents.
Season two, he's, you know, both parents are still there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, they visit him occasionally. I love when he's on the phone. And this is in season one. He's on the phone. He's like, I don't know, Mom. It's a bomb stain.
I don't know how to get this out.
How do you get that out of
it? So awesome.
Okay. Season three. At the end of season two, Clark proposes.
Yeah.
And Lois's response is, who's asking? Clark Kent or Superman?
Ooh.
And that's how they end season two. Mm-hmm. That's the end of season two.
Mm-hmm.
Season three... Lois knows, and now we start into the we take the tension out of it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a character in season two who's a district attorney who does not like Superman
mm-hmm.
because he's a vigilante.
Mm-hmm.
literally does not like Superman. Her name's Mason something. I don't remember the last name. I have a child named Mason.
Okay.
After her.
Oh, I love it.
Because I love the character so much. Because it was like, you know, and of course the whole thing is Clark's torn because, hey, she loves Clark. And mm-hmm. But Lois loves Superman and mm-hmm. back and forth. Anyway, mm-hmm. So the start of season three, they're like, okay, the problem is now we have all this tension that's built up in the first two seasons. Lois now knows, how do we deal with that?
Mm-hmm.
There's a character in there's a
I've taken my glasses on and off because I totally know where he's going.
To say there's a character in Lois and Clark called Tempest, mm-hmm. and he's a time traveler, and he's from their perfect future, the perfect future created by Lois Lane and Kal-El,
mm-hmm.
and he's describing the perfection. Blah! Anyway, but yes, so he's
seen as the dumbest woman in history. He just sees his glasses.
You're known
on
as
off.
The dumbest woman in history.
How did you not know?
I'm Clark Kent. I'm Superman. I'm Clark Kent. I'm Superman. Duh. What a wonderful line. And then Orson Welles, it's actually a time traveling. So Orson Welles is there with the time machine.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you're not dumb.
I love comics.
You're not dumb. You're blinded by love.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
You say what you want to believe.
And so, yeah, you've got these characters, and then the problem is, without that tension,
mm-hmm.
oh, well, we're going to have to get them married. And so Clark ends up marrying a clone, which is actually made from a frog. It just got... In fact, they actually one of the cool things is they did is they married Lois and Clark in the comics the same time
mm-hmm.
the same week mm-hmm. that they did it on Lois and Clark the TV show.
Mm-hmm. I remember that was a big deal at the time.
And it was a big deal, you know, Lois in the white dress, and one of the more iconic covers, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they actually titled, if you look up in season three, "This Time We Mean It, No Kidding." that's the title of the episode.
I love it.
Because people had gotten, and I did too. I'm like, come on.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing happened with Smallville.
Yep.
I loved Smallville the first.
I've
the
only watched a few episodes of Smallville. I could not get into it.
The first four, they go back to his comic book history, right? Because mm-hmm. Superman and Lex were best friends in the comics in the Silver Age. Best friends until Lex starts a chemical fire and
loses his hair.
Well, Superboy blows it out.
Yep.
The chemicals and burns his hair off, and that's what starts the whole rivalry.
I love that. That's what starts the whole rivalry. I'm bald now.
Anyway, so Smallville was great. It was supposed to run four seasons: freshman, sophomore, junior, senior.
Mm-hmm.
That was supposed to be the whole mm-hmm. show. They were never supposed to get into Lois. They were never supposed to get into Metropolis.
Nope.
None of that. And it was after the fourth season, even in honesty, even by the third or fourth season, things were starting to kind of crumble. And it was like, come on, guys, just end this. And if you want to start something new.
Yeah.
I did the same thing with the Flash TV series.
Yeah.
I watched Flash religiously for about the first four seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh, really? Another speedster?
That was me in Supergirl until when they switched network and they just decided to like ignore all the character development they've already done and bring in Superman as like Supergirl became a sidekick. They got rid of Cat Grant. Cat freaking Grant is one of my favorite people. I would name a child after Cat Grant like you did Mason. Like, when she, in the first season when they first name Supergirl, I was like, why can't we call her Superwoman? And she's like, I'm a girl. You're a girl. Are you saying being a girl is a bad thing? Like, freaking loved it. All right.
Kate, it has to do with aerodynamics. Now I get it. What a brilliant way to explain capes, right?
Because
mm-hmm. it's like, why do we have capes? Oh, they help with when you're flying.
Right. I love it.
Such a great idea.
Now we're starting to talk about this. Let's go ahead and take a break and let's dive into kind of the rest of the DC universe, how it connects back up to Flash and how to dive into it. Let's take a break. Excited, and we're all over all the DC universes. This is so much fun.
We were talking about Supergirl.
Supergirl, yeah. And because they went back and they retconned the characters and they changed them. And one thing I love about the comics is, you know, you have the original that the writer created. And I think you do need to stay true to the characters that they've created. I don't mind a Supergirl that Jimmy Olsen is black. I'm like, that totally makes sense. That wouldn't have been a marketable reality back then when it was started in the 1936? When was Superman started?
So Superman started in 38.
38. Okay. But, of course, if we're starting in, I don't know what Supergirl started, 2018 or whatever, then that would be part of a reality. But you still need to stick with the characterizations of the characters, like who they are. Yes, I like Superman with – I like Clark Kent and Lois. Like, right. That's how it should work out. The first time I, like, realized what a couple was probably Clark Kent and Lois. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. And then a mom and dad and Adam and, okay, this is the life. Like, you can't change it so much that it's no longer their character. If you're going to do that, just give us a new character.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes people complain about, you know, wokeness or, you know, why is it Supergirl and not Superman in this movie? As long as it stays true to who the original writers were, that's just fine. And then each generation and each version of storytelling and as we progress as a society, then we can change it. And I think this movie does it really well. Like, we have an older, disgruntled Batman. I freaking love that. We have naive young Flash and a little bit older, wiser Flash that's dealing with life. Love that. Love that it's Supergirl that's there to protect. I love how doggedly she's fighting. She fights to death.
Yeah.
Multiple times. Like, this is such a great version of this. We talk about if you're going to change the character enough, you become someone new. And they kind of do that literally when they get to our climax, when we're in that Kronos bow and the worlds are colliding. I was thinking, was it Mirror Master? Because he had kind of that little sheen to him, the one that pushed him out. But it wasn't.
It was himself. Yeah. So as soon as he started acquiring the bits and pieces, I realized who it was.
Yep.
You know, he gets the chunk of Kryptonian metal, mm-hmm. and he holds on to it because, hey, Kryptonian metal can pierce Kryptonian skin.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as he started doing that, well, probably not the first piece, but as soon as he got the second piece, I'm like, oh.
Mm-hmm.
So that's who knocked Barry out of the Chrono Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And we get this version, and they did this really well with the series, and I don't remember which version comes back as kind of that same character that we see in the Flash movie, but they have a character that's basically the same thing. It's Barry who's just
really who's lost, I haven't seen the TV series
who's lost much. Iris so many times.
Oh, okay. That so it's Iris instead of Mom. Okay,
so because he keeps going back to her.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Well, if I can just go back one more time, I can save Iris.
One more time.
Jay Garrick comes back in the television series with one of the greatest lines for explaining this whole phenomenon I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
They're sitting in the coffee shop, right? The coffee shop that they're always going to.
There's always a coffee shop. Yep.
And Jay reaches out and grabs the coffee cup. And vibrates it and just shatters it. And he goes, it doesn't matter how many times you put it back together, Barry, it's still going to have cracks.
Yep.
Right. And that's mm-hmm. that's kind of the whole idea mm-hmm. behind what Barry has become.
Mm-hmm. Oh, even visually. Oh, wow.
Is that there are these cracks and you can't fix them. It doesn't matter how many times.
Mm-hmm.
You try, and that Barry, the monster Barry, the mm-hmm. whatever you want to call him, has a great line. He said, "The problem is you are the fracture point." And then he says, I can't just allow you to live because you'll just go back and stop it. And so he gets ready to kill him. And of course, that's when the younger Barry, who's got five or six little pieces of metal sticking out of him, steps in the way. And of course, because he gets killed in the Chrono Ball, it dissolves the other one. Because if he gets killed in that Chrono Ball, that other version will never exist because all of the attempts at going back and going back and going back and going back. And then we see the world start to pull apart. Yep. Right. And things start to reform back into what they are supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And then we get what may be my favorite scene in the entire movie.
Really?
When he goes back and he picks up a cap and he picks up the glass, some sunglasses and puts them on.
Wipes off his face.
Wipes off his face, walks around the corner and tells his mom goodbye. Mm-hmm. Knowing that, you know, and let's face it. The compelling thing about this storyline is, who of us, if we had the power, would not go back and stop some things? If we could go back in time, would not have gone back and stopped some things? And Barry has now seen what happens if he does that. Because the younger Barry has, you know, he's trying to save Kara. And I love the fact that the younger Barry has fallen madly, deeply in love with
Kara.
Our
kids are going to want to see this.
Our kids are not her kids and my kids.
The kids in general.
The kids in general. You know. And so that's why he keeps going back. Yeah. He is trying to save Kara. And it's just like in the TV show where Barry's trying to go back to save Iris. And it develops into this. Literally, it causes the worlds to crumble and collide and to fall in on themselves.
As it does in our lives if we live there.
And so here's Barry going back, making, let's face it, what a tough choice. Mm-hmm. What a tough choice to go back. And I think in Man of Steel, this is what they were hoping they were going to get when Clark allows his father, allows Jonathan to die in the tornado when he holds up his hand and shakes his hand.
Beautiful moment.
I hated it because he can go in and stop that, right? The Flash takes this critical, I'm going to allow someone I truly love to die, and does a much, much better job than Kevin or Costner holding up a hand. And the look on his face, too, I have a problem with that scene. I loved in Superman the movie, the original, he dies of a heart attack.
Yeah,
there's nothing Clark can do.
He could not help.
There's nothing Clark can do. I really like the premise behind Superman and Lois, the current WB TV show. Okay, let's face it. There's not very many things you can challenge Superman with, truly challenge Superman with. An autistic kid who has powers? Oh, yeah.
That'd be a little hard.
That's a challenge. You show me how super speed or super strength are going to fix that. So we get Barry. He goes back and makes that awful choice to let the world survive. We get it from Spock. I know.
A different universe, but a great one
The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one.
Which is what we're constantly facing in our reality as well as in these comic book universes and these movies that we're seeing. And I loved how well they illustrated it with the mother because she was such a kind person. An awkward guy came up to me. He was like, you remind me of my mom. I would be in the next aisle over instantly. But they really showed how wonderful and nice and caring this woman was, that she would stop and talk to someone like that and even say, can I give you a hug? Like, she must have been an amazing person. And they illustrated that so well. And you still had the contentment of him being able to say goodbye to his mom. You still had it. So he was able to kind of fix the universe, although he does kind of – did he actually learn because he moved the tomatoes to the top shelf?
So that his dad would look up and
the butterfly effect that Bruce Wayne warned him of. But it was done in such a beautiful way that you feel emotionally good about it. And it was also done in such a way that he was able to heal. And even though he didn't have that influence of his mom raising him, he was able to get some of the positive influences of the younger self that was raised in it. He became a little more open and trusting. Like, he does allow – he's like, yeah, I could ask Iris out.
You know, one of the things – It's that resolution, right? And we get that in once again switching universes, but going over to Marvel.
Yeah,
I love that Tony Stark. They go back in time to steal Pym particles.
Yeah,
I love that Tony is able to talk to his dad.
Yeah,
and get that resolution that he never got to have, as we learn, because he and his dad had a fight before his dad and mom leave. And the Winter Soldier kills them both.
And that's the power of storytelling. We can, in our stories and the heroes we look forward to, have those experiences, the moment of relief, of going back in time and talking to your lost father, of saying goodbye to your mother, that we can have in reality. And I think that's why I always tell people, it's like, well, I do all these things, but I'm a storytelling and arts advocate. It's the stories that change our lives, and it's what's changed our lives. We're both avid DC fans because of the stories they've created and how it's impacted us. I absolutely love it. I love how this film balances out. I love the little twist at the end. It's a different Bruce Wayne. He did move the cans. He stepped on the butterfly. It's going to be a little bit different.
You know, one thing I loved, though, is with that whole setup is – Ben Affleck and George Clooney, their voices are so close enough. I did not hear it. I don't know about you.
I was listening for it, too, because I'm like, there has to be something else.
You know, I'm like, and he's like, well, I'm here, Barry. And you see the car pull up, you know, and it's the same car.
That's not the chin. That's not Ben Affleck.
And it's like, oh, that was well done that they've – And you talk about that soft reboot, right?
Yep.
And that gives us that soft reboot there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you and I have said, we have talked about this. Why in the world did you have to kill the Snyderverse?
Ugh.
That he changed the cans.
You didn't have to kill it. Just continue
it. There's the tweak. That doesn't mean you can't go over here with the James Gunn universe.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean you can't do that. It does it fine.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to come out and say, no, Henry Cavill's out. Gal Gadot's out. Ben Affleck is out. All these people are done. We're done with them. You don't have to do that.
Mm-hmm. And we've seen, as the chair of Michael Keaton coming back, it would be fun to have a little Ben Affleck back. Henry Cavill, stop giving us absolutes. Let us keep playing in this universe. I want to see a Batman Beyond with freaking Ben Affleck as older Bruce.
Sure. And again, we talked about this on the way out of the movie.
Yep.
Marvel, how many different presidents has Spider-Man met in person?
So many.
Right?
And that's okay.
And it's okay because these are stories.
And
we get back to this. This is a story. You know, ancient worlds had myths.
Yeah.
They had Thor and Odin and Freya.
Mm-hmm.
And they had Zeus and Hercules and Poseidon. And they had Ra.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know a lot of the Egyptians. Sorry.
I know, because of Stargate.
Okay. But they had myths. And what were those myths? Those myths were stories. Those myths were a way of conveying belief.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's what we have now.
We have superheroes. Superheroes are the angels of the Middle Ages.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There are angels.
They're myths. The mythical gods. Yep.
There are stories to tell compelling things.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's why there really is no such thing as superhero fatigue if they're changing the story in such a way. Like, it's the next generation. It's the next people telling it. It's the next cartoon. It's the next version. You can keep going. We're still retelling the story of gods. We're still talking about Hades and Persephone. We still have another Superman, and that's okay. And that makes me wonder, what got you into DC Comics? And so, how would you suggest others get in?
So I am entirely a Christopher Reeve Superman fan.
Okay.
So, in fact, when my mom and dad took me to see Superman, my grandfather was very, very, very upset because someone had watched Superman, a little kid had watched Superman, and had tried to fly off the roof.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. He was convinced I was going to try and jump off the roof.
Oh, wow.
You know, my mom's like, Dad, he's not going to try and jump off the roof. And I didn't, right? Mm-hmm. But it got me into story.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of a weird person. I read Lord of the Rings at 8.
I love that. You beat me by a few years.
Okay. I am a huge Star Wars fan,
mm-hmm,
because that was the age. Star Wars, mm-hmm, Lord of the Rings,
mm-hmm,
and Superman specifically, but then I branched out.
Yeah.
At one point, I was collecting every single Superman comic, every single Batman comic, and about half of the crossovers,
uh-huh,
until, oh no, we're going to do, I had to cut back because I couldn't afford it.
Because they're so expensive. Yeah, same with me, cut back a little bit and such.
And so I was collecting the two, in Batman, I was only collecting the two linear timeline books, right? There were five books, and I was only collecting the two that were chronological,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then they came out with a huge crossover called Contagion,
mm-hmm,
in which it was in 15 books, including Catwoman, Robin, Nightwing, Azrael. I'm trying to think what some of the others were. But there... So
it's a big story arc over multiples.
I get two comics out of 15.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, comic book stores, and this is kind of the late 90s, I think, is when that came out. Late 90s, early. It would have been the late 90s, mm-hmm, mid to late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
They're not buying extra books because the books wouldn't move and they would sit there and they couldn't afford it. And so they were pretty much only buying comics for the subscriptions. There was no chance I could get that book. And this was before graphics kind of came along to say, hey, we had this great big arc. We're going to give it to you. You can come back and buy it for whatever.
We're going to repackage it into one big
book. Here's the whole story.
Here's a special edition. Here's the black and white edition. Yeah.
So it's kind of before all that was happening. And I was like, I was so mad. I'm like, this is ridiculous. And so I canceled my subscription to Batman.
Wow.
And then they had I was still collecting all five Superman books, and I don't even remember what sets it off. But Superman becomes a being of energy,
mm-hmm,
and he absorbs so much. There's a
stars.
I think it's actually from the death cycle. So when the kryptonite engine is turned on him and, mm-hmm, Eradicator steps in front of him and changes it into red or yellow sunlight instead of kryptonite. And anyway, it's kind of weird.
It's comics. It's
recharges him. Well, the problem is it blows the cap off, right? So now instead of stopping absorbing energy, he just continues. In fact, there's one comic where he's just out kicking asteroids.
Yes. Because I just like that phrase too, kicking asteroids.
Well, and the thought bubble is, I should be dead. I've had no oxygen and I should be dead. Anyway, so he ends up becoming a being of energy, kind of like All-Star Superman.
Mm-hmm.
He ends up literally becoming this being of energy, which I was with, but then they split him into Superman Red and Superman Blue.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the last Superman comic I ever bought. I said, I'm done. Mm-hmm. I'm done. I'm sick and tired of you trying to do all these stupid spins. Just tell me a good Superman story.
Yep.
Tell me a good...
That was when they killed Damian Wayne for me. That was when I stopped.
Yeah. It's like...
You can't make me fall in love with these characters and then for a marketing push, kill them.
And for a marketing push. Mm-hmm. And that's the exact problem is they... So I did. I said, I'm done. I'm done putting my money into this. Mm-hmm. And then I did buy some new 52. I was like, all right, let's see
the new.
And I
new
read
launches.
Them, and I went, I don't like this. I don't like this character. This is not Superman. Mm-hmm. You want to call this somebody from Daxamite, or you know, you want to call this somebody from Daxam or something like that? Sure, fine. This is not Superman.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, if you change the character too much, it's no longer the character. You might as well give me someone new.
Yep, give me someone new. And but yeah, so for me, getting into it, coming back to your original question, it was Christopher Reeve.
Yep.
And I loved how friendly and smiley,
yes,
and I loved how positive Christopher Reeve was, both as Clark and as Superman.
Yeah.
He was bumbling. I've told dozens and dozens of people of this. The physicality of Christopher Reeve, he made you believe that you could hide behind a pair of glasses. The scene where they've been out flying, which is my least favorite scene in the entire movie.
I was
an 8-year old, and it was okay. That I'm like, we didn't need to see that. Right? Because I'm an 8-year old.
Yeah.
Even now, it's still my least favorite scene.
See, and then there was like 12-year-old me when I saw that one for the first time. I'm like, oh, this is the most romantic thing. Yeah.
Anyway, so they've landed. Lois is, and Clark is immediately right. He takes off, and he's immediately around, comes up the stairs, and he's immediately knocking on her door. Yep. Lois. And she opens the door, and of course, she's just stunned and whatever. And that's something, Clark. Mm-hmm. And he kind of smiles to himself, and she goes, well, it's a little cold out. Maybe I need a jacket. And she goes into the other room, and he's slumped down. And Christopher Reeve did such an amazing job. He changed his height by 2 inches between characters, between his slouch. And Lois, there's something I have to tell you. And he transforms from Clark into Superman right there in front of your eyes. Okay, yeah, he's not wearing the cape. He's not wearing the tights. But he transforms, and you see Superman come out of Clark Kent. I'm super nervous about... And he transforms back into Clark Kent. What an amazing piece of work.
So good.
And it really was just how positive and how good he made me feel, this little 8-year old me. And lo and behold, that was kind of my introduction. My mom was working at a bank at the time, and I would go up to the bank. Now this is, understand, I grew up in a smaller town, and this was not anything like the world
like
we live in
today,
now.
Like it would be today, yes.
I would go up to the bank, and my mom would give me a quarter, and I would walk down the street to the corner drugstore, and I would buy a root beer float and whatever comic. They had a rack of comics, and I would buy a comic, and I would sit there and read a comic book and drink my root beer float until my mom got off from work. And
that's adorable.
That's how I got into DC.
I love it. For me, it was kind of a similar experience where one media introduced me to another. So I was probably in kindergarten, first grade when the DC animated universe really started. You know, the popularity of Batman, of Tim Burton's Batman. Let's bring him on to TV. And the thing was, is at that time, they were willing to take risks. They were willing to take time on design. Like the fact that it was drawn on black paper, on black screen. They'd pulled in the animation stuff. They pulled in the stories. I loved it. I remember people saying, what's your favorite show? And I would say, Batman. I love the animated series. And they would tease me because it was meant for boys is what they said. And I remember specifically coming home so excited because you had to rush home for it. And watching an episode and it had Harley in it and it had Ivy. And I'm like, see, it's girls. It's okay. I can like this. And then that pressure made me click and turn the TV off. And even though throughout growing up, I would kind of secretly be watching it. I didn't realize how much I loved it until I was older. It was my mid-20s when I was, or late 20s even, when I was told you can surround yourself by things that bring you joy. You know, the KonMari cleaning book, which I've talked about before on this podcast. And I said, I can. Well, I've always kind of liked Batman. And I got my Kindle for Christmas. I had the free books and everything. And the new 52 had just started. And I just devoured it. And what did I do? I went right back to the animated universe. I watched all of Batman. Loved it. Was able to go from there into the different story arcs that you talked about. Was able to learn that, you know, Paul Dini created Harley Quinn. She was created for the animated series. And she's so popular now, she hasn't been in movies. She has her own thing. She has her own hero. Freaking love Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn. And I started reading the comics. I started looking up the history. I was like memorizing Wikipedia and just like writing my own like mini articles about it because I loved it so much and getting all this from these beautiful things. And then you go into the Justice League series and the Justice League Unlimited series, and you get all these little things of like, oh, here's an episode and it's Billy Batson and Captain Marvel, which we know is Shazam now. Like you just dive into this culture and it's just so much fun and it's so wonderful. And, you know, we're coming up to the 10th anniversary of FanX soon. The first FanX, I was still so nervous to go and to talk about my fandoms. I wore my jeans, a red shirt, and a crown that was Wonder Woman. Like, that's how how timid I was, and I went to the panels and I was quietly. Now I'm on panels about it. I'm cosplaying it. I'm talking. I went and visited the studios and talked to the executives there. You know, I told Jeff Johns I'm going to work for him one day. Like, this has become so much part of my life from a silly kids cartoon. Like, stories mean something to us. Characters mean something to us. And I wish DC Comics appreciated their characters a bit more, that they would stop thinking about the money and the marketing and restarting. And, you know, they do great at rewarding us existing fans. Let's just let the characters live their lives and let new people be drawn to it because of the strength of the characters, because of the strength of the stories. And, you know, for me, when I tell people you should get into the show, that's what I say is go watch Batman, the animated series. You know, and then bridge into Justice League. And, you know, Superman's kind of cheesy in the animated. That's okay. But Batman Beyond, that Bruce Timm style is so wonderful. And, like, there'll be little episodes. Like, I love Child's Play or something when they de-age to, like, 8-year-olds. And it's Morgan Le Fay's son there. And it's, like, a big Disneyland-type thing. The great brain swap when Lex Luthor and The Flash, and it's Wally West it's Wally West in the animated stuff. They switch brains. And it's so funny. And it goes back to how great of a character Flash is. He is the heart and humor of the Justice League.
Yes.
He makes it.
Absolutely.
Which I wish you got a little bit more in this movie and in this, you know, this Snyderverse. Hopefully we'll get it in the Gunverse a bit more. But it's these stories and these people that keep us going. And that's why I'm always going to keep coming back to DC. I might not want to work for them anymore. I'll let them figure some of their own stuff out, but I will always keep coming back to DC.
Yeah. And I'm like you. Like I said, you know, Spider-Man's met a couple dozen presidents.
Yeah, that's okay.
It's okay. Mm-hmm. We realize that this is not reality.
Mm-hmm.
The readers are not going, why? Well, this doesn't make continuity sense because Superman was in the 40s and he's still the same guy
in 2023.
Guess what? We get it. Mm-hmm. We get that this is a character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't see Sir Arthur Conan Doyle aging Sherlock Holmes. You don't see.
They progress, but they don't really age.
They don't age. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not, oh, well, let's see. I'm going to have to do something with that character. Jack Ryan from Tom Clancy.
Mm-hmm.
Good grief. Jack Ryan is impossible.
If no.
You know, the Jack Ryan from
in the books is so different.
Red October to now, the man would be, he'd have to be like, what, 120? We can suspend our understanding. I wish DC would get it.
Yeah.
And just go, oh, it's okay. And, you know, we talked about, and I know we've kind of wind up here, but
yeah.
we were talking in our parking lot talk. I related a story, and it's mm-hmm. of all the stories that I've ever gotten from DC, it's one of my favorites. And I don't remember everything that happens anyway. There's a character that comes about. His name is Access. You're convinced it's Superman because it looks all you see is kind of a shadow, and it looks like Superman. Anyway, this character, kind of like America Jones in Marvel, yeah. can jump between universes. He's not bound. He's an access. He's a door to a different universe. And we walk in, and it's Dick Grayson as Robin, not Dick Grayson as Nightwing, but mm-hmm. Dick Grayson as Robin. Batman's there. Superman's there. Wonder Woman's there. I think Aquaman's there. I think Lantern's there. But I think it's Dick Grayson that makes the statement that, you know, they're kind of looking and they're in this essentially this great big sphere with a bunch of television sets. Now, these aren't flat screens like we're used to today. These are the old tube TVs, mm-hmm. right? So here's this just bubble of these old tube TVs. And he makes the statement, it's like we're just stories waiting to be told. Why in the world can't DC go, oh, I get it, mm-hmm. and not worry about, we have to kill the Snyderverse.
No.
We have to kill this verse. We have to, oh, New 52. No, we're going to go away. For crying out loud. Mm-hmm. You want to tell a New 52 story?
Go for it.
Spider-Man 2099? Wait a minute. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Batman Beyond.
Mm-hmm. Freaking love it.
Great stories.
Mm-hmm.
Just tell
beautiful the artwork.
Just tell the stories.
Yep.
You know,
we're access. We'll choose what we want.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, and what we get from the Flash, bringing it all the way back around.
Oh, great.
What we get from the Flash is this understanding that guess what? There are hundreds, if not thousands, of other worlds. And not just other worlds, but other universes
mm-hmm.
where these people can exist.
Yep.
Can't there be a universe that's the Snyderverse?
Mm-hmm.
Can't there be a universe that's the Gunverse? Mm-hmm.
Can't there be a Halvoverse out there? That's me. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Can't there be a universe where these characters can be? And, oh, are we going to fund that project? Maybe, maybe not. But don't slam the door and say, nope, this can't. We're done with this. Stop cutting off the possibility of good stories.
Yes. Oh, I love that. And I think with that, that's the perfect end of this episode. And I think it is because we left and I'm like, I loved it. And I felt it was bittersweet because I wanted it to keep going.
Right?
I wanted it to keep going. I loved the movie. I wanted more. I am so glad we've got this opportunity to nerd out and talk about things. And you've given me so many other things I want to go look up now in the DC universe and the DC world. Maybe I should give The Flash, the TV series, a chance again or go back to those. Thank you, everybody, who's been patient in listening to us on this very long but very fun episode of The Fan Effect, sponsored by the Megaplex Theaters. It's a KSL News Radio podcast. Beyond sci-fi, fantasy, gaming, and tech, we are excited to share with you our knowledge and often arguments on everything pop culture and fandom. We're based in the beautiful Beehive State, where Fan Effect celebrates our Utah's unique fan culture, and we're excited to bring to you local guests like our friend Don here who feel the same way. I'm Kellyanne. Again, Andy Farnsworth is out of town today. He's celebrating his last little vacation push before he takes on the movie show, which we're so excited about. Go ahead and listen regularly to our podcast on your favorite platform. You can find us at kslnewsradio.com, the KSL News Radio app, kslpodcast.com. And if you have a fun idea or local fan culture topic you want to share with us, you can find us on Facebook at Fan Effect Show and give us a message. I like to post the latest nerdly updates on there with a few dinosaur and science thrown in because I love those. You can also follow us on Twitter at Fan Effect Show. And, you know, just thanks again for listening. And we hope to have you back real soon for another episode of Fan Effect.